Jermaine.
Hi.
We don't like the Skype. I don't like it. Leon tried it. He didn't like it. I don't know if Katie did it yet, but if you went on there, there'd be nobody there to look at. You'd have to look at yourself. So if you want to find out how to do it, you would talk to Bill.
Well, if you guys aren't on there, then it's fine.
Yeah, it's a big distraction. That's right. And I can't think when it's on there. I'm too distracted looking at things, so I become very ineffective in my role as asshole on this show. So I prefer not to use it. Now, we have Chad here, and Chad gave us an assignment, and I don't know if you remember it. Have you got email there, Jermaine?
Yeah, I'm looking at the blog he sent us right now. I was just checking it out before I called.
Yeah, hello, Chad. I don't understand what I'm looking at. Hello, Chad. I don't understand what I'm looking at. The first thing I see is, I want to fuck you to so many songs. Is that just random posts by children?
Yeah, they gave the kids an assignment to fill up a Tumblr feed with different images, and this is the result. And they're like high school kids in the Bay Area.
Right.
I just thought we're always looking to get like a slice of what youth are up to. And this just, I don't know why this got sent to my inbox, but it did. So there's two things. There's this blog, and then there's an urban dictionary where they define some of the terminology that the kids use today.
Right. So I'm looking at a blog that's going to be constantly added to.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's all it is. You don't know who's posting anything.
Well, all you know is that they're kids, high school kids in the Bay Area.
Right. And the very first post is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, nice shot of the bums of about 7 young women, right?
Mm-hmm.
As they bathe in the sun on the left. You see that? Is that what you see?
Yes, that's the right page.
Very nice page. And it says, I want to fuck you to so many songs. And that is seems to be being said to the that picture, right?
No. These are all, like, separate posts. They're just being fed into this.
Yeah.
Sequentially.
So would the picture of the young women, that would be the latest post or the very first one?
The latest.
You're a little blurry, Chad.
That's the latest post.
That's the latest. Well, it's a very nice picture. It's a good idea, whoever came up with it. Don't you like that, Jermaine?
Are you guys looking at 18 in the Bay?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. I see the first that comes out of mine, it says, who am I?
What would that be?
You're not looking at the right page. Okay, so scroll down, Jermaine, until you go past from the Who Am I section to the featured section.
Yeah.
Third thing on the right, get me out of high school.
Oh, okay.
And if somebody listening wants to look at it, you go to http://18-in-bay/get-me-out-of-high-school/e68dc75cf770. I'm sure you got all that. If not,
or they can go to medium.com, or they go to medium.com/18-in-the-bay. And then from there, that's the main landing page for the different blogs. And they can go down to the Get Me Out of High School blog.
Okay.
The main landing page is the one Jermaine went to. I just sent a link directly to the Tumblr. Yeah.
Right, so it's medium.com. You don't even need to put in the HTTPS anymore, right? You just put medium.com/18-in-the-bay. You'll get there and then find the high school part. So
yeah, but there's a whole bunch of things on this landing page. There's the Urban Dictionary, Survival Guide to High School. If you scroll down, how I spend my time, what I think about, my mood during the week. So I just thought this was like a really good anthropology project of young people.
Yeah, I agree. It's okay, so we have here Leon. How you doing, Leon? We have Anonymous. We have Sean from London, England. And then we have a Blocked. And then we have, I think it's Trey out there in Lancaster, California, a wonderful place to retire in with the memories of Zappa Land, which Trey takes advantage of. And so you're welcome to speak and look at what we're looking at. I think it's pretty good, Chad. Now, you've looked at this. What do we learn from it? What are points that you could say?
Well, regarding this Tumblr blog itself, it seems to be, they like to use a lot of these memes where they have the talking or the moving image with the text caption on it. That seems to be a way that they communicate ideas a lot.
Right.
Do what I mean?
Like the two women.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a fat woman with a person, a taller woman. They go, the kitchen. Is there food in here? And it's a repeating 2-second image, that kind of thing, right?
Yeah, I think, remember, yeah, a GIF, exactly, animated GIF. But
so
the majority of the posts here seem to be captioned pictures.
The host, did you say?
So the majority of posts seem to be captioned pictures.
Right. And it's very easy to put these pictures and things in there. I mean, I've never done it. You just have to learn a few steps and stick it in.
You mean to make a picture or to put it on the blog?
Yeah, to make a picture on the blog.
Well, they would have been given a login to Tumblr where they could select an image off the web and add it. I don't think it's hard.
Okay, but we can't get in there. It's blocked. It's
no.
Only for pre-registered.
It was only for the select kids that were in the project.
Right. So my first impression is there's not much one can say to any of these kids. They've got their own scene. They're not listening to anybody. They're just dealing with the anarchy among themselves and their position within their peers. You know what I mean? That's very, very involving what they do. I don't know what society thinks they can say to these kids. The kids show up at the stores. They go to the burger joints. They riot. They beat up people. Did you see that? The poor white guy at a hip-hop concert. They beat up his face, and he's lying there unconscious, and everybody's running around like a bunch of maniacs, laughing, yelling, and jokingly say, call 911. Did you guys see that video on Drudge Report?
No.
I just know anybody over 25 is going to be scared shitless. They're going to want more gated communities. They're not going to go downtown. They're not going to go where any kids are. They're bloody maniacs. It's certainly, I ain't wading into them. So, wait a minute, people. We have non-physical here. I think you'd pay attention to non-physical for a couple of minutes. Not likely. So we're all forced to become bunkered. We're all bunkered against each other. Worrying about the anarchy of the kids that aren't being parented.
Which is most of them, because they're growing up at an earlier age, they're just going straight to the iPad and getting on the internet.
Right. So there's if there is somebody in charge, I don't know what they think they're going to get from it, other than they'll scare the majority of the population into just not bothering the Illuminati, so the Illuminati can continue flying around and having their parties with Hugh Hefner and whatever, and not be bothered by the little people, because little people will be scared shitless that their own children might beat them up.
Yeah.
If there's a plan behind it, that's the plan. It just have more and more riots, more of this chaos to scare the respectable working people. Or the respectable people on the respectable welfare and the respectable dole, right? Which is increasingly more and more people. And then we watch people like Jermaine run around trying to grab images to be part of the stuff to entertain the kids. Right, Jermaine?
Yes.
Our fate is to provide, hopefully, saleable content for the maniac kids. That's capitalism.
At least have
today.
We should start selling snacks that they can consume while they're watching people getting beat up at concerts.
and then the other part of society is the virtual class, who the middle class and poor people are scared shitless of, because they know the elite virtual guys are at the city center of disease controls making diseases to kill you off. So you got it coming from below and above. And we, Bobby, Connie, and JW, with their buddy mascot Iron, walk into the midst of this 7 billion people in dire straits to offer something strange.
Something strange?
Yeah. Something strange can't be explained, but seems to work and would have devastating effects if all of it was released. I mean, Roxanne has been doing a series on repentance. She evoked from Ion a pretty neat definition of repentance. And so we've been talking about it, and there's a whole bunch of YouTube stuff she'll be releasing. Might be about 10 parts. But Roxy has gotten so whacked out, it's obvious to her that it began with Bob and ends with Bob, and Bob's explaining and solving everything, and she's forced to make videos about it and see if anybody responds or cares. So Carolyn, or Connie, whatever, I was talking to Roxy, and Carolyn came in, and she says, "Roxy, ever since you started making these videos, Bob's got a ridiculously swelled head. And we walked into a New Age bookstore here on the island that we'd never been in before, and Bob couldn't control himself. He threatened to call them during payday and demand to hear their weak excuses for being spiritual beings. And we were eventually basically kicked out of the store." So we were on the rock.
I'm acting like little B cursing people.
Getting kicked out of stores. Yeah. They're lucky I didn't pound her head to shit, man. I could have kicked the shit out of that store owner. But it started off okay. I was just talking about the books, and the owner of the store, this woman, overheard me, and she said, "You're interesting." And I don't know what I said about us, and she said, "How come we haven't heard about you?" I said, "Well, I'm too busy running a cult. I haven't had a chance to show up with any local operation. I've been here 7 years, but first time I've come to your bookstore." And so it sounded like she was interested, so we talked, but then I started talking to her employees. Pretty quickly, she's yelling, "Shut up! Keep it down!" as I was explaining to this Chinese worker, and getting the worker all excited and confused and bamboozled, and I told her words came before a thought, and cells talked before bodies were made, before mouths, and she said, "That doesn't sound right." And so I created such an energy emanation that they said, "You're going to have to leave the store." So it went from, "Hey, how come I haven't heard of you people before? How come we don't know you? You're welcome to perform here," to "Get the hell out of the store." Rapidly. So the friend that took us here said, "Bob, when you go in there, do not mention anything about Ion. The Maoiites are just craving new agers. They want new fads all the time. If they find out about you guys, it'll be hell for you. You won't have any peace." And so we went in, and I violated her suggestion and drew all this attention to Ion, talked about Ion, and then we got kicked out. And I said, "See, that's how you do it, Jennifer. You go in, you get them all worked out, but I know I can go through the whole process, and they will want to have nothing to do with us by after 22 minutes. And so we walked out with no fear of being mobbed by local Maoiite New Agers.
Have you guys run into any of them since then?
No, we'll never go back to that store. It's such a dinky store. They were just, it just had the typical crystals and other objects and amulets and about 100 books, only one copy each, but various semi-vanity press, New Age testimonials, and the usual stuff, you know, the stuff that we destroy and actually do better at and provide. Like, there probably was nothing on the Emerald Tablets, but there would have been something, a derivative of it, and we, of course, present the Emerald Tablets and their translation. So I realize that we're so powerful, we can't even be registered on a commercial level the way it's normally presented. So that was fun, and so that caused Roxy to laugh her head off that she was being accused of causing this problem in Maui.
So I don't know, your head was pretty swollen already.
I know. Well, Carolyn doesn't experience it. She's not around when I'm usually doing the dialogues with Roxy. She looks at the videos, but from a safe distance. But when we actually go into the marketplace, the cliche environment of America, we don't experience that often. We've never been in a store in Maui together other than Macy's when we went there last year and bought me a suit. And that was, I was pretty well behaved there. That was for the Europe trip. But we've never gone into maybe our territory, a New Age bookstore, together. And, of course, Carolyn's a respectable person. She doesn't like being kicked out of stores. So she felt, she's going around saying, what the hell happened? Jesus Christ, Bob's got a big head. Well, when we go into stores, it rears its ugly head in relation to the ground of normal people. And I was told that by Jennifer that the owner, she's been in that store several times, and the owner is a bossy person and thinks highly of herself. So it was two megalomaniacs confronting each other, even though I was not intending to confront anybody. I was just expressing myself to a couple of employees that were interested in what I had just said. Apparently I sound louder than I'm aware of.
So that's what started it.
She said, "You're talking too loud. Keep it down." And I wasn't aware that I was talking too loud. I was just expressing to this.
Were others in the store, or just you and Carolyn?
Yeah, no, there were only about five people. It was the afternoon. Not much happening. There's only about five people plus about three members of the staff, and then Carol and I and Jennifer. And I did notice the other four customers or so standing there staring at us. They were staring at me talking to the Chinese person, and I was probably saying words they'd never heard before, chromosome 14, RNA, you know, all this stuff I was saying would be immediately seem odd. The normal pink boy,
mm-hmm.
which Roxy just learned about this phrase that she was listening to some old CKLN shows, and she learned that I would insult people by calling them pink boys. So I can't stop her calling people pink boys.
Pink boys?
Yeah. The Church of Subgenius calls people, two-thirds of the planet, who are not subgeniuses, calls them pink. And they usually add pink boy. It's pink boy. So she loved using the word and was using it wherever a chance she gets. She called me a pink boy several times during our recordings. And so I just used that term to describe the people, the consumers there in the store staring at us. They were like gaping pink boys. Chad's been accused of being branded as a pink boy for 10 years. Chad is an archetypal pink boy. But Chad can be proud. He's actually retorts. He's not a subgenius. He's a subdini. Very proud to be a subdini.
Yeah, but at first I got to you by going through their crap on the internet because I only knew that you were called Bob Dobbs because I got the tape.
Right.
And then I had to search to find any Bob Dobbs material, and I got stuck in the pile of their shit for like 5 years thinking that it was your stuff.
You got that, listeners? You young people, fake young people, you will have to go through a gauntlet of image confusion to get to what the heck we're talking about right now, what we're celebrating. We are your savior. There's no doubt about that. We are your only hope. And you got to get right with us, or you'll be hoping you can get a gig out of your posting to a high school Tumblr blog. It's your only hope for a career.
Wow, that's not much of a hope to go on.
I know, that's the point.
Their chances in hell keep getting slimmer and slimmer.
Right.
Hey, Bob.
And, I don't. Yeah, I just. Is this Gene? Who would this be? Troy? Is this Sarah? Who'd I just.
It is me, but that's not who was speaking. That's the correct number you're looking at. That would be me, but someone else is talking.
Who just said hi, Bob?
Oh, no, I said hey, Bob. It's Jeremy.
Oh, okay. Yeah, now what, I was going to tell you guys something. I lost it. So Chad, talk a little bit about what you found exciting about this place.
If you go back up to the main landing page, 18 in the Bay.
Right.
And you go down to, there's a set of graphs under the Who I Am section.
Right.
These are graphs made by the kids to explain, like, what they spend their time on during the day, how they feel. I think even though it's kind of silly and stupid, it's kind of what we've been asking for on the show. We want to know how these kids, how the youth of today perceive themselves, and here it is, handed to you.
Yeah, it's perfect. Now, I'm looking at who am I. Do I click on who am I, or is the entries just below it, like why?
Go down below. There's three sections below it, and there's one that has these graphs. Click on the first graph, how I spend my time.
Graph. There it is. With the pie. Yeah, the pie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, look at that. This is good. Okay, so... The red part, wondering what I'm going to do after school. Yeah. Blue, ready to bash someone's face. That's number two position. Green, waiting for the bell to ring. Yeah, that's the main emotion. Black, happy because it's lunch. But the majority almost is ready to bash someone's face in. Now, nobody would say that 30 years ago. I mean,
they
what
could
a
use their lunch tray and it'd be good.
I think Sarah was one of the early people to feel these emotions back.
I did.
Time,
you know what
right,
I did
Sarah?
At lunch? I would spare change in the lunchroom by holding out my hands cupped and saying, "Help stop anorexia fund. Buy me donuts." It worked every day.
Wow. Yeah, you got kids begging in school. He's a homeless kid.
Panhandling in the cafeteria.
Right. It is so irresponsible. If there was a leadership, Warren Buffett or somebody, or even Congress, but nobody could take them seriously, if there was a leadership, they're so irresponsible of what's happened to their society. You know? Mm-hmm. It's outrageous.
But
that's why I think that there is no society, that the people who could take our responsibility can't do anything about it because it's been virtualized and the Android mean took over, and it's a fraudulent idea to even think that anybody can help anybody. Mm-hmm. And that's why it looks pretty bleak.
There's a lot more Warren Buffett.
Wait, what are you saying, Sarah?
I said I love that guy. Warren Buffett. I don't think he's being irresponsible. I think he's actually being extremely irresponsible. He's been very open about how he gained everything on his own volition, lost everything, not by choice, gained everything again. He's a cool guy.
Okay. Well, and you know, he's a very good friend of JW, and a few weeks before Ion came through. So this would be the end of February 2009, and Dave Neufeld was staying here. I think it was he'd been here for 3 or 4 days. I remember the Friday afternoon, JW called and said for the first time he took an interest in my terms. He says, Bob, what is the Android meme? And I explained it, and then he told me that he wanted to know because he just spent the afternoon with Warren Buffett, and Warren Buffett went on, this is what he literally said, went on how much he was influenced by McLuhan and was talking about tactility. And that is actually the first question that JW called Carolyn in February 2006 after meeting Carolyn in around December 2005 in Atlanta, Georgia. And he called, he says, I want to ask you what your husband said that you quoted. So I get online, and he wanted to know about the word tactile. So there it was. I explained to him tactility then, and he probably didn't understand it the way I would like him to understand it. So then that would be January 2006. So 2 years later, two years and a couple months, he's calling me saying he's just talked to Warren Buffett, who went on about tactility, and JW wanted to know what, okay, if this guy is talking about it, I got to find out what it means. And Dave, and I couldn't tell Dave who I was talking to because it was always confidential, our relationship with JW. So Dave sat there not knowing who I was talking to, heard me explain a bunch of stuff that Dave had heard on CKLN 100 times, right, through the years. Back in the old days, he even made an album
story
with me.
Story of Neufeld's life, The Woman of Aubrey, explain everything he documented.
Could you say the first part again? Missed the first part.
Oh,
again.
I said story of Dave Neufeld's life. You just have to re-listen to Bob, explain everything he took the time to document.
That's right. This
that poor
2006.
Guy.
No, 2008, so it is 30 years. 30 years after Dave in 1988 was hearing me explain it to him. And here's Bob doing the same thing. I mean, Dave's just sitting there seeing how Bob's living, and there's Bob explaining tactility, and he didn't know who I was explaining it to. And but that, I'm just indicating the insider knowledge about Warren Buffett that JW brought to the table. And then a few weeks later, there's no more JW. He's gone. And Ion's here.
Mm-hmm.
So, sorry for that digression there, Chad. I thought it had something. Okay, Warren Buffett, how'd that come up?
What people are doing with their time, ready to bash them in space in, not proud of society
Sarah,
that these people are,
Sarah thinks that Buffett's pretty cool with the burden of the image of responsibility he has. Right, so these kids, they're on their own, so they're saying, wondering what I'm going to do after school. Now they're all 18, right? 18, so that's the year of decision. And they got all this pressure on them. Why would they want to bash someone's face in? Because it is violent there? They're ready to be attacked?
No, you bash someone's face in if you're pissed off.
Right, so they're very pissed off, very angry. Croker and the postmodernists write about ressentiment, R-E-S-S-E-N-T-I-E-M-E-N-T. I guess it's a French word, that the bourgeoisie experienced, say, since the 70s, the resentment that they, as McLuhan would say, they got ripped off by something, and they didn't know it was the electronic environment. And so everybody was bitter, and that led to famous people like Rush Limbaugh being the voice of that resentment. And I guess today it is Bernie Sanders, right today, the communist guy who's getting the high ratings in the presidential campaign. This resentment is like natural and more extreme in the kid world, in the youth world. It's no longer just the bourgeois middle class, ex-working class.
So everyone feels ripped off.
Right. Yeah. And that's why the phrase rip-off became popular, because McLuhan said the old literate identity, the face of that identity, was a mask, and it got ripped off. And nobody knows what face to put on. We've tried many different faces. And then that's a T.S. Eliot poem. There's lines like, I'm preparing to meet some people, and I'm wondering what face to present to people. So a lot of this syndrome was first described in The Vortices, Eliot, Lewis, Pound, Joyce, little bit of Yates, and then McLuhan saw that happening right in his immediate neighborhood, no longer limited to the artistic avant-garde world. So now people, what do they do now? They like to have their face ripped off. It gives them a sense of livelihood, right?
I don't get that.
Well, it's flipped. Since the chemical body is so obsolesced by the android meme, then people engage in violence as the only way to express a sense of energy in the chemical body, and that would include often being motivated by outrage over something. And so they look around to see what to be insulted in, but it's a voluntary looking. They're not upset that they find something to be outraged in. You know, 50 years ago, people were used to having relatively bland, stale, quiet lives. Now people require their chemical body to have a sense of life, so they want to be outraged. So they look for it. All you have to do is look at any topic and look in the comment sections, on the major websites. I mean, people do not engage in dialogue. They just look to insult people.
And that's very true. A lot of social media is just a lot of people just saying negative things about whatever is posted. I've seen that a lot.
Whatever is posted. Go ahead.
It's angry comments or people just being negative.
And trying to be funny or to be clever. They're performing. Everybody's an actor, and they're aware they have an audience, so they try to look good, whatever their style of good they want to be, from being mean to being super positive. And here's the prophecy of the Church Subgenius. Their alt-aut slack probably was the most extreme version of that 30 years ago. They pioneered that attitude, at least for the virtual years. What do you think, Chad? Alt-slack, it has genius insulters.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, they were, they were ahead of their time back in the day. Back in the early 90s.
Oh, well, they were ahead of time with the radio version in the 80s, but for the Internet. Matter of fact, Stang says that the Church was going nowhere in the early 90s. No sales, no interest. And then somebody, it might have been that guy, that great insulter, forget his name, from New Orleans, dropped in and forced Stang to sit at the computer, and he showed Stang how to get online and do all this stuff. And within a year, the Church Subgenius was back in the virtual fan profile, because everybody was getting on the Internet anyways, and they liked what was going on there. So their whole image got recovered by the Internet. But they didn't...
Okay, because I was going to say that, too. When I first started going on the web, there were only a few things available. One of them was, Timothy Leary's website, where you could walk through his home on a virtual reality tour.
Can you give me the exact date of that, Chad? Because I think I was there, witnessed that in 93 in L.A. when we did our recording with him. Would this be 93?
It very likely could have been 93, because I would have been in my last year of high school, and that's when they added the mosaics to our computers. Remember the old web browser, when they first came out, they're called Mosaic. Yeah.
Right. And they gave that to you.
That was when they put them on, was in my last year of high school. I know they didn't have them in the second last year, because that's when I did the stock market competition, and we had to do it on the black screen. We didn't have the Mosaic browser.
Oh, I know Mosaic.
So I'm pretty sure it was 93.
Right, so here I am in May 93, me and Nelson at Leary's house, and there were a lot of these young kids that were part of some kind of computer thing, and he did a talk that week. And he had a snazzy video, but digital, and it was made by these online kids, and it was all about celebrating McLuhan as the new Socrates. That's what Leary was promoting. That's why we were allowed into his house. He was interested in McLuhan. And he was on the Internet, and I didn't know about the Internet. I knew about bulletin boards, but it was not something I was interested in engaging. I don't get on until next year, 94. So he definitely was doing something that I wasn't doing, and those kids were the main core around them. When he gave his lecture, he introduced them at the end and praised them for their digital abilities. And you're right. So I didn't know that's what he offered, but Leary was the first pretty well. For a popular culture offering.
Well, he was really, he was talking about, yeah, he was talking about the virtual reality stuff in the late 80s even, wasn't he?
About 80, well, maybe even mid-80s, but nobody paid attention until Mondo Serious started happening in the late 80s, or Mondo Hollywood, or whatever that magazine was called, Mondo 2000, and then Wire comes out in the spring of 93. That's when it really took off, and that's when people saw that Leary was already into it. And, of course, Leary was calling Wired a CIA operation to counter his influence through Mondo 2000. That was the battle right there. And they both were in San Francisco. That battle, I quickly became aware of that because Camille Paglia was on the cover of the first Wired, and Stuart Brand, who you heard Mary McLuhan talk about the other night, about that incident. You guys know that Mary was on our show?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was listening to the show, yeah.
Right.
She didn't know she was on the phone. I mean, on the radio.
Yeah, don't say anything else. We had to delete the whole thing. The whole thing's been deleted. So anybody's listening now, if you go to the archives, it's not there. It was a tremendous event, but it was so explosive, avant-garde, and evidence of what happens when you have a private session with Ion. You lose control of yourself, and you start talking beyond your sense of privacy. So it's been deleted, but it was very interesting. And Mary described how she became head of the education department under Governor Brown in the late 70s because she brought McLuhan out. Now, I was fully aware of that whole thing because I was at the coach house with the secretary while McLuhan was out there doing this trip with Corinne, and they eventually went to Hawaii and Fiji and back to California, all over the place. And in one of our recordings on our site, Ian and Bob, look up the McLuhan audios with Tony Schwartz, there's a phone call recorded by Tony Schwartz, let's say about July 77, where McLuhan's talking about that trip, and he has come back, and he's visiting New York to visit some of other Mary's other sisters, like Stephanie and Terry. So that's right there on the timing. But McLuhan, you hear Mary describe the details of how she got McLuhan and Brown together, and it was through Stuart Brand. And I don't know if you noticed, but in nonlinear circle, one of the elements of our nonlinear circle with Mark Stallman was that Mark Stallman was out to get rid of Stuart Brand. He was always out to get Stuart Brand because LaRouche was out to get Stuart Brand from the get-go. And you listen to Gerd Stern for the history of how Gerd got Stuart Brand, who had just come out of the Army in the early 60s, how Stuart Brand ends up being one of the bus drivers with Neil Cassidy, on Ken Kesey's Further bus and that whole psychedelic thing. And Stuart Brand did the Whole Earth catalog, and he's still going and very involved. What he has now is called the Long Now Foundation, where they're raising money to build a clock that will tick for 10,000 years. And he thinks this will help people think into the future. It's an anti-ion project.
Jeff Bezos from Amazon is part of that project.
Yes.
Too.
Yes, yeah. Yep. He's got major funding. I read a bit about it. It's like it ticks once a year. A big bong happens somewhere, wherever it is. And it ticks once a year. It's supposed to go 10,000 years. But that's Stuart Brand. He went on to make a huge name for himself. He was very instrumental in getting Wired off the ground. And but he did the whole Earth catalog in the late 60s, and then that was gone by the early 70s. And then he started Co-Evolution Quarterly, and there was a great interview transcribed, 77-78, from that summer visit, where Brand made sure McLuhan met Governor Brown. The transcript of that meeting, it's a good dialogue, is in my archives and in the Co-Evolution Quarterly, probably winter 78 issue. And Mary gave us the background of how that happened. And McLuhan said that he would meet with Brown if there was no public announcement of it. But, of course, Stuart Brand, Mary says, did bring the media in, and Brand did have access to the media, and McLuhan was interviewed, and I remember getting the articles the next day because I went down to the center, and Marg had the newspaper articles right away, and it was really great. I'd never heard McLuhan say things like that. They asked him what he thought about the unemployment situation. He says, there is no unemployment. You can't be employed under electronic conditions. You can't have a job. So they thought he was nuts. You know, there is no unemployment. And he said other outrageous statements. It's a really good dialogue for new ideas that we hadn't really heard McLuhan say. And then they asked him, well, you talk about you have to have an important TV image. What is Governor Brown's image? How's he doing? So there's McLuhan. He's just met Brown. I don't think McLuhan was a relatively polite person. He didn't want to alienate Brown, but he's on the spot. He has to judge the image. So McLuhan says, well, I don't know. I've never seen him on TV. I can't speak to that. So he had a good alibi. He can't make a statement unless he's experienced the image, and he hadn't done that yet. Anyways, Mary went into the details of all that. And why are we talking about this? 1993.
Stuart Brand. And why did we start talking about Stuart Brand from the Subgenius conversation?
Oh, yeah, yeah, the Mosaic. Okay, so, yeah, Chad, back to you. So I think you're going to say that the Subgenius was one of the first things you discovered in 95, 96 online?
Yeah, so the Timothy Leary thing would have been one of the few things on the Internet in 93. And then I was given your tapes in 1995, and I was immediately so excited about it. I thought, okay, where can I find more information? So I started scouring the web. Was the Positone site up then, or did that come later?
Yeah, Positone was 96. It could have been, but it was very close to the Positone. I associated with 96.
Okay. So I probably was, that was right. I probably only found Church of the Subgenius stuff relating to Bob, because I remember they had some quotes from Bob Dobbs on their webpage or something.
Not me.
Right, not you, but I didn't know that.
Yes.
It said, you know, Bob says, and then it had in quotes, and it would say something like, I can't believe I let that guy fuck my wife, or something like that. And I was like, okay, interesting. This is a little bit different than the Bob on the tapes.
Right.
I guess that's him. He seems like a man of variety. So,
you know what, Chad?
They just had all those stupid, you know those stupid mottos they have where they say, like, Bob said this, Bob always says that, yeah.
Yeah, fuck them if they can't take a joke. If you act like a dumb shit, they'll treat you like an equal. They'll treat you as an equal. Those are some of the famous ones. But here's I just realized, Chad, on my chart, I have 1990 to 2020 lockdown Bob rule, and I say it's the after image of the Android meme, which was Hidden Ground from 60 to 90. So I'm claiming I'm the center of the after image from 90 to 60. Well, this is the first evidence that that I was there at the beginning of the Internet for the masses, or at least for the young people who were getting on. And our interview in 93 was done in Leary's house, and in 93 they were offering a tour of where Bob had been. And you could go listen. You could look. It's on my timeline. You could look at that, the video of that TV show. It took about a year for the woman to put it together. It caused so much distraction in the Hollywood studio where she was editing it that all these people knew about Leary. And they kept saying, what? He's saying that? Now, what are those guys? Who are those guys? Why are they talking to him? Why are they saying that? It caused a lot of interest right there in the building she was editing the tape. But it took a long time. And then it got up there. And if you watched it, in 94, you would be in Leary's house, which, if you were, like Chad said, around there on the Internet, you would say, oh, that's the house that the only thing you can see on the Internet is Leary's house.
Yeah.
And then a year later, the Church Subgenius starts to get a high profile because Stang luckily got on there, and that's me. So, geez, we actually did happen that way, Chad. I did get in there very early on the Internet by default.
Yeah. Because there just wasn't that much, entertainment stuff on the Internet back then.
Yeah.
It was a lot of, articles, scholarly articles, a lot of, engineering articles, porno, e-commerce wasn't even happening yet, and Google wasn't even there
right.
yet.
And that's the reason I went on. When I heard that Croker had formed a website called C-Theory and that I could read his articles, I get on there, and, of course, I thought I couldn't read it. It hurt my eyes, so I would print everything out, piles of paper, and we were living in New York City. Piles of paper. Carolyn got on before me. She got on to the medical chat line. physicians.com or something. What is her POL? Physicians Online. That was her first email. Purple@POL.com, I guess, or purple@POL. Yeah, .com and Physicians Online. But she found the, quote, ego bashing, lack of civility in the discussion irritating, so she dropped off it. And then she just, I don't know what she did on the web, but she had to have an, she had purple@POL.com. So she didn't want to be on POL, so she, no, she changed it to holiofarm@POL.com, and that's how I got the name Purple. I took her name. But I only went on to read Croker stuff, and Croker was the appropriate guy to read. He was ahead of everybody on describing the world, the internet world, and he had developed a, quote, past McLuhan. But I would have to read it on paper. But that only lasted about 3 or 4 months. Then I could take it, watching the screen.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And not have my eyes burn out, or I just got used to it.
Yeah, I know. I don't know how I made the transition, because back in the early 90s or so, I was the same way. I had to print it out. I couldn't stand reading on the screen.
Right. And it was horrible. You would when did the happen? That was getting online, or did it happen whenever you went to anywhere?
That was in the 80s up to like 90. Oh, no, you still had the slow internet connection.
Yeah, the dial tone.
Dial-up. So that would have been until, depending where you lived, if you were in New York, it would probably only been up to like 99, 2000.
Right, yeah. And so that dial tone, did that happen? That was just to get online. That dial tone didn't happen every time you went to a new site, did it?
No,
it was just to connect you. Yeah, to connect you to the internet,
yeah.
And then you were on. Yeah.
But it was so incredibly slow and tedious. It was touch and go whether to bother with it. You know what I mean? If Croker wasn't on there, I wouldn't have gone on. There was nothing else I was interested in.
You know, back in the 80s, because I got on way before the World Wide Web even came on, really.
Right.
Before
you were in the bulletin board?
The bulletin board system. And used to go on bulletin board systems to chat with people, to look for phone numbers for other bulletin board systems, to read text files. And text files were like underground zines and instructions on how to do sociopathic things. And and then, of course, they had images on there, and most of the images were porn. So if you downloaded a picture, you'd have to find it. The file name would have a file name like, you know, blonde big breasts.jpg or something.
Yeah.
You'd click on it, and just for that one image to come up on the screen, you'd be waiting, like, you'd go and, like, make coffee and come back, and the image would finally be loaded up on the screen.
Take 5 minutes.
But it was funny how it used to load, because it used to load line by line on the screen from the top. So it'd be like you'd be watching it. It's almost like a strip tease. You'd be like, oh, yeah, this one's looking good.
Yeah, great shoulders. Oh, great rise of breasts. Oh, great nipples. Great belly button. Oh, some bush, too. And then you go down through the thighs, right? You had to work your way down the body.
And you just hope to God that it wasn't mislabeled on the file name and end up being, like, some kind of porn you really didn't want to see.
So, every 5 years I'd marvel at how fast the thing improved, and I kept thinking of the Evergreen saying the change would be fantastic, unbelievable. They were saying that in the late 80s, Cosmic Awareness through Paul Shockley said something like that. They said back in the late 70s, early 80s, that the population would be dazzled by technological releases. The Illuminati would just bamboozle the public, and that's what happened. By 95, you got riots in New York as people ran, lined up, and tented out to buy Windows 95. You know what I mean? They were just crazy.
Yeah.
So, yes, the population got totally hobsmotched by the replay of the Android meme. But you look back, it's so great now. I mean, who could have imagined you'd be with everything, nothing lost through YouTubes? And remember, the Evergreens, McLuhan spoke to Michael through the Evergreens about Michael could see it. He said, look, everybody's broadcasting. And this was in the early 90s, right, with this slow period of what we're just talking about. Who would imagine that it would be what we got today in Web 2.0? But Michael saw it, and McLuhan showed it to him, you know, in his dream state.
Didn't the Evergreen say something about a kid in Australia who was living in a pod?
That's 1978. Yeah. They did a session in 1978 saying a day in the life of a person in 2078, 100 years later. And it's about the kid living in a matrix tube, like the beginning of, what's the famous Wachowski thing called? Matrix? The Matrix?
Yeah.
Right, The Matrix. Keanu Reeves is living in a tube, right? He's flesh in a tube, hallucinating that he lives in New York City. That's exactly what the Evergreens described. And so it begins with, you've probably heard the audio, or less read the transcript, right, Chad?
It would have been a while ago.
Recording?
I don't know, maybe the 2007 or something?
No, you heard it at some point in your life. The you know this session. You've heard it. You read it. A Day in the Life of a Person in 2078.
Yeah, I think the last place I would have seen that was on Five Bodies. The transcript posted
right there
or something.
Right. So in it, in the first 10-15 minutes, there's this boring kid. Well, we don't know what it is. Yeah, it sounds like a kid talking about his wonderful life. He does this, he does that. And he has a girlfriend and this and that. It's so boring. I used to play for people and they'd all fall asleep. And I'd say, no, you got to wait. Because at the 15-minute mark, the Evergreens would interrupt what the kid was saying and say, now this kid isn't experiencing any of this in chemical body terms. They wouldn't use those words, but they would say physically. It's all being virtually plugged into his brain through a laboratory in Australia. And it's a prototype of people living inside a matrix tube like Keanu Reeves in The Matrix. And they laid that out in 2078. And Michael's wife of the time, not Ellie, but before that, Philippa, she was shocked. She couldn't believe it. And in the dialogue with the Evergreens about it, she's just really can't take it. What? We end up like that? You know, and everybody said, yep. So that was pretty avant-garde. And so if I could get the people to realize, and then they would be surprised, oh, this kid is not experiencing this stuff? So then they'd start to listen and pay attention to it. And then the next 40 minutes was pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So.
The key thing is it was like the virtual reality aspect. Kid wasn't experiencing any of that. And I read an article the other day about webcam girls and how some of them are making like $1 million a year now because guys will pay by the minute to go talk to them privately. So it made me think of the Evergreens recording, right? Because it's like, oh, yeah, I have a girlfriend and I do this with her and that with her. Well, it's like these guys feel like they have a girlfriend now. They pay her by the minute to talk to her. They're looking at her on screen. She's undressing, doing whatever kind of sexual stuff he asked her to do, but it's through that. Yeah. It's growing really rapidly.
Yeah, you're saying you thought of 2078 when you were thinking of the webcam reality?
Yeah, I thought, oh, we're here now. It's already 2078.
Yeah. Now, they're conscious. They're aware of their chemical body still. This kid, I don't think he knew he had a chemical body. I'm not sure, but it seemed that way. I'm closing all the windows because it's raining. But the, Chad? The kid, it was like Keanu Reeves, he didn't know, I don't know if he had a chemical body. Did he have one?
Well, it's questionable whether he actually had one or imagined he had one.
Right, like Zion was sort of the chemical body world that he was taking.
That was supposed to be like bringing back the organic body kind of thing in Zion.
Right. So we're talking about Leary because what got us into this?
How I got to your stuff through the subgenius garbage.
Oh, yeah. And it took you several years to find me.
Yeah, I think... It ended, the search ended when I found their mailing list, and I was able to tell who you were because you were called Purple at Ingress
yes.
or something like that.
Yes, Purple Dot
Ingress. I didn't realize that it was you. It took me a while of reading Alt Slack before I realized, oh, that's the guy that's on the tapes, and the rest of them are a bunch of buffoons. Actually, you know what?
Right.
I think it took me a long time, Bob, because remember they had the poll? Time Magazine did, like, the biggest fraud of the 20th century in 1999. Remember that?
Late 99, yeah, I have a copy of that. I won.
Right. And who?
I was the biggest fraud in the world.
Yeah, exactly. But when that poll came out, that was around the time when I realized which guy was you on Alt Slack.
Right. Because I was probably...